You're listening
to the When Life Hands You Lennons podcast.
But in an entry-level film production, it's one strike and you're out. You're fired. I'm not calling you back.
If your goal today is to make a basket, we're going to make that basket.
The minute you create something, as soon as it's made tangible, you have a copyright in it.
How do I get our guys to sound that big, you know, that full when they do the harmonies?
And I'm your host, Lennon Seahawk. Let's get to the show. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of When Life Hands You Lennons. I am extra hyped to share this episode with you because it is with DJ Knowledge, who's probably one of the biggest DJs you've not heard of, funny enough. He has DJed for Rihanna. He's DJed for the Backstreet Boys. He's DJed for Mariah Carey and Ariana Grande, among many others. And he is in Las Vegas and has lived there for the last 13 years. And he's originally from Canada. And he has an interesting story and how he goes about marketing and all kinds of crazy things like that. But we talk about some political things, like how the situation of the coronavirus has been handled here in the United States, among many other things. We talk about his life as a DJ, what it's like, how him and his partner have kind of worked together to be creative. We talk about some marketing tactics, and then we talk about like rejection and what that's like and how you can kind of handle rejection and how you can move forward from that, among many other things. And he's just got an incredible story, and he talks about all kinds of great information, and he shares some great stories that can keep you motivated. I know I was very motivated after this conversation, so I hope you enjoy it. But before we get into the conversation, I want to remind you to please sign up to my mailing list because it helps me notify you when new episodes like this are live. You can sign up via the link in the show notes below or on my website, which is just lennonseahawk.com. That will be in the show notes below as well. I would also appreciate it if you would follow me on Instagram. You can follow me at lennonseahawk.com, L-E-N-N. O-N-C-I-H-A-K. That's my username on Instagram. And send me a DM there. Ask me how I'm doing. I'll love to spur up some conversation with you. And I post daily things there as well and some personal things. I would also appreciate it if you would leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts, as it greatly helps the show get boosted in the algorithms and be discovered by new listeners. And lastly, if you or somebody you know would be a good guest for the show, there is a link to the guest request form. Please fill that out. So without further ado, let's dive in to my conversation with Knowledge. Cool. Well, thanks for jumping on with me. I'm glad we can make it work. I know we kind of went back and forth a few times trying to make this work, so I'm glad we could.
Totally. Me too.
Yeah, for sure. So where are you coming to us from?
Las Vegas.
How are things there in Las Vegas then? Everything kind of opening back up, or what's it like?
I mean, it's like, yeah, it's open, but we're getting a surge in COVID cases. So, you know, the rumor is everything's going to get shut down in 2 weeks if it stays the same or gets worse. That's the rumor. They're trying to keep the tourists here. The governor's orders were basically, if you're a tourist, you're welcome. If you're a local, stay home.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, it's crazy. I know I'm in Los Angeles, so Southern California is pretty much locked back down.
I know your governor has been pretty strict about stuff.
Yeah, he has been pretty strict. And it's crazy of how everything's been panning out. It's like, I thought, you know, he had a pretty good grasp on it at the beginning. Like, he handled it like he locked the state down.
I was in LA. Yeah.
I'm like, okay, then I feel good about what he's doing. He's doing the right thing.
Right.
He's trying to be, you know, safety first. But with California being the most populous state, it's, I guess, kind of hard to manage 40, 45 million people.
Yeah. I mean, we really missed a critical juncture early on.
Yeah.
You know, with the federal government being slow to respond because our, you know, commander in chief decided it wasn't a real virus for a while.
Yep.
And that was the critical time where the virus really had a chance to spread. And now, I mean, again, the scientists are learning as they go, but the cold is certainly having a negative impact. Mm-hmm. You know, you see the cases rising all over the country, and it's getting much, much harder.
Yeah, I know back, I'm from a small town in Minnesota, right on the border of North Dakota as well.
And, oh, yeah? Which yeah, town?
From Fargo, North Dakota.
I know Fargo.
Okay, cool. Yeah, yeah, so about 25 miles east. Where have you been in Fargo?
The last time I played there was about a year ago, but they used to have, like, how old are you?
25.
So might have been around, right around, no, wouldn't have been around, like, it shut down, but you guys had a gigantic club there.
Yeah.
And I can't even remember the name of it now, but it was gigantic. It was literally the biggest club from, like, Seattle to Minneapolis, or, like, it was huge. It could hold over 1,000 people.
Wow. Yeah. I'm trying to remember what that club was. I think I know what you're talking about.
It's in a complex.
There's the Shields Arena. There's, I can't think of the names. There's one kind of, it's out in, I think West Fargo or something. I don't remember where. No,
this would have been in this is like kind of in the middle of the town. So
yeah, I guess.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, it's huge. I know which one you're talking about. I just can't think of the name of it and where it's located.
Yeah, it would have been before your time.
Yeah, I haven't lived there in probably 5-6 years now. So,
okay.
Yeah, so I know, like, with COVID cases, I'm like, when it first kind of started, I'm like, oh, this is, you know, we're going to get this under control. It's not going to be as bad as they say it's going to be, you know, trying to stay positive about it. And now a few of my family members have gotten it, and, you know, it's starting to get real close to home. And I know I have some family members who are not in the greatest of health. So if them getting it could render some severe consequences.
Yeah. A really good friend of mine's brother's passed away from it. And another friend almost, he was in ICU for a week. He's better now, but he's still not 100%. And, it's just crazy the amount of misinformation out there, you know, and it's like,
it's sad because it's become too political now.
Right. And it should have never been, you know, and I don't know where your politics lie, but that's up to the commander in chief to show some leadership. Right.
I agree. I think we're probably on the same path on that mindset.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not in support of him, but, we could have definitely handled it a lot better than we did. And unfortunately, 250,000 people will be one person less without this holiday season.
Yeah. And I mean, we had some good news with Moderna. I was a volunteer for Moderna for their vaccine. So I may or may not be vaccinated already. I don't know. It's a double blind test.
What is that? What's
I might have gotten the placebo.
What's that like? I've never had anybody test a vaccine before.
You know, they wanted volunteers, so I volunteered, and I was in for Nevada. They had a team of doctors, and they gave me the injection. They explained everything. They made me sign basically sign my life away, saying if I died, they're not responsible.
Yeah, sure.
No, it wasn't that bad. But the nice thing was they guaranteed me healthcare. So if I ever did get COVID or anything, I was guaranteed healthcare. Oh, did I lose you? No. Okay. Sorry.
Oh no.
Thought your screen froze on me. But they guaranteed me healthcare. So that was a bonus.
Hmm.
And you know, I was supposed to report any symptoms or anything. And, I've been on an app that monitors me. So I took one shot, and then about a month later, they gave me another shot, and you know, I'm supposed to report any symptoms or anything. And I haven't had anything. So
interesting. Wow.
I've been fortunate. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, thank you for contributing to science. That definitely is going to help us out as we move into the vaccination stage. Cool. Well, let's get away from the sad news and talk about the happy stuff, the music and stuff we're both passionate about.
Sure.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? Are you a musician? Tell us all the good stuff.
Well, that's a good story. I mean, I'm from Canada. So
wow.
Born in Toronto, but I moved to a pretty small city on the West Coast, near the West Coast of Canada. But I've lived most of my, I guess you could say, my working life here in the U.S. I started DJing on cruise ships, and that sort of opened me to a whole new world here. I went from like small town Canada to like DJing the only cruise ship in Texas at the time to like DJing Miami. It's crazy. And then it just slowly evolved. And then, you know, people always told me, you got to check out Vegas. You got to do Vegas. And man, I remember the first time I flew in here, 2007, I'd landed within 5 minutes of being on the plane. I was like off the plane. I was like, I got to move here. So, yeah, it was pretty crazy. You know, I did whatever I could. I did, you know, had to get a work visa, of course, and all that stuff. And that was a tough journey. But yeah, I mean, from there, my career took a big jump. I started touring more and really focusing on that. And, you know, I really, at the time, I acquired the skills to play diverse music, which a lot of DJs couldn't do. They were either hip hop or they were house music. And for me, I was always good at playing all kinds from the cruise ship. I could play, you know, we had to play to every audience, old, young, black, white, and everything in the middle, right? So it was pretty cool. I learned how to be really inclusive, you know, so it'd be challenging at times, but it really gave me this depth. So, and I've been able to use that, you know, in my career throughout, because music keeps changing. And unless you're a superstar for a certain genre, you really need to go with that. And, you know, and then as my career has evolved, you know, production and making your own music's become a bigger part of it. And, you know, my life took a really interesting twist here with COVID, you know, because now my partner, my girlfriend, happens to be a highly accomplished musician. So,
wow.
It was really cool. She's a classical pianist with a love for EDM. So it was really cool. And we've been collaborating ever since. It's been a really, really cool journey. We've been here for the last 3-4 hours actually making Christmas mashups of some of the biggest hits right now. So,
wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, you know.
So how long have you been in Vegas?
13 years, 2007.
Wow. So what is it? What is a... When COVID is not here, what's a day in the life of Knowledge look like?
Or a weekend? It's usually touring. I mean, last year I was on the road. I think I was home for less than 100 days, maybe 90 days, I think I counted.
Wow.
So I toured with the Backstreet Boys last year in Europe. And then I stayed out there to tour some more on my own, Norway, Germany. So, you know, for me, that's always been my bread and butter, is getting new audiences, you know, finding clubs that like my style, and, you know, bringing, you know, so my marketing is very much, you know, bring that Vegas feeling, that Vegas vibe to your club, you know, whether it's in Fargo, North Dakota, or Stavanger, Norway, you know? So, you know, a lot of my days are really going on the road. That takes a lot of logistics, figuring out your hotels, your travel, your flights, your trains, your buses, what, you know, it really does vary depending on the city and where you're at. Right. So what
kind of music are you playing, and what is it like touring with the Backstreet Boys? Like, what were you opening for them? Were you playing their music so they could kind of sing over it? Like, what does that look like, a DJ on tour with the Backstreet Boys?
So for me, yeah. So I opened, so they had me play a 30-minute set, you know, with, the only instructions were turn the crowd up, which was really cool. Their management were like super easy to work with.
Great.
You know, so they were like, we know you know what you're doing. Get out there and turn them up.
So, and as a Vegas DJ, that's obviously what you know what to do.
Totally, totally. Now, you know, I've made a name for myself touring with some of the biggest acts in Europe. And I think it's always been my secret to DJing. I think, you know, a good DJ knows how to play music the crowd wants to hear. Or they know how to play their music. A great DJ knows how to mix it between the two. So it's like, you want to give the crowd what they expect with just the right amount of surprises, you know? So another thing I would do is communicate. I love talking to a crowd, right? So I would learn the local language. I would learn songs that, you know, they'd know locally. So when I'm in Portugal, I'd play a certain song. When I play in Germany, I'd play certain songs. And, you know, I'd say critical things in German at just the right time, or when I'm in Italy. So I usually have a DJ or a friend, you know, in these countries, and I'd be like, okay, how do you say this? How do you say that? And I would write it down in English so I understood it phonetically, so I could say it phonetically correctly and pronounce it correctly, you know, to the crowd. And people love that, you know? So with the Backstreet Boys, it was a lot of 90s. You know, but I'd throw in just the right amount of like EDM, or, you know, some new hip hop stuff. It's all about timing with DJing, with, you know, certain DJing. It's about knowing how to put things in at just the precise moment where a crowd expects one thing, but you turn it up with something else. You know, that's kind of the background I came from DJing.
So you've also toured with Ariana Grande and Mariah Carey.
Yep.
And obviously they're all very different genres kind of in the pop world, but very different styles. So you're DJing for them or opening for them, obviously their audience is going to be there and they know of Mariah's music or Ariana's music super, super well. So how do you kind of mix it just enough where you're not turning them off or like kind of you're building up all the energy and then you break it by playing the wrong song or the wrong sound?
Right. So that's a tricky thing because every country's a little bit different. So it's a combination of playing it safe and taking these calculated risks. You know, I've likened it to walking a tightrope, and sometimes I've fallen off that tightrope. I mean, it's how you become great. You gotta not be afraid to fall. You know, as you develop, it takes time. So the trick is I can't play any of the artist's songs, but I have to play stuff that reminds them of the artist. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, when I'm opening up for Ariana Grande, it's young girls and their moms.
Yeah.
Right. So it was actually really cool because I'd play something modern and mash it up or mix it with a classic, like Britney Spears with Miley Cyrus, you know, or something like that. And you know what? They ate it up. It was great. You know, the crowds were always really receptive. And the key is I'd usually come in, you know, with a big intro that I created. And then I'd play it safe for a little bit, kind of warm the crowd up. And that's another secret to DJing that people don't usually appreciate. A good DJ knows how to warm up a crowd. It's all about getting them sort of into the vibe. Right. Because you can't just come in there and come in with your big guns, you know, and the easy, like a rookie would just start with the big hits and then they'd run out of gas, you know, 10 minutes in, they're out of the hits. Right. So you really, really got to plan your set in such a way as to play stuff that you could call it an oldie, but goodie that people know and warm them up and go, okay, yeah, this guy can win me over. And then, you know, you might lull them and then boom, you hit them with some big surprise. Right.
Mm-hmm. So how do you keep them? Like I've been to so many events where the opening DJ they're great at first. And then after like 15 minutes, I'm like, okay, it's time for the next DJ. I'm ready. It's like literally the same style of song. Like it's either trap music or it's like the same thing. It's like, I want something different here. You got to give me something else. Like it's all like, you know, EDM is built for the drop. And it's just like, you just hit the drop and then they go back into like a 16 bar buildup and then they drop it. It's like the same thing over and over. And I'm like, I love EDM. Like that's my thing, but you've got to change it up a little bit. I mean,
totally agree. On.
I get so bored even with these high octane drops. It's like, I get so bored with them.
You know what? I couldn't agree more. So just to tell you a little bit, what helped, it goes back to the small town I lived in Canada, where when you learn how to DJ in a small town, you got to play for everyone. Yeah. So like if you're in a big city, you're in LA, you're in Chicago, Las Vegas, you can go to a club for house or EDM. You can go to a club for hip hop. You can go for trap hip hop. You can go for R&B, right? So those DJs get very good at that because I was on the cruise ship, because I come from a small city. I really had to learn to play for everyone, believe it or not. Like, and it just really opened my eyes. I mean, I was a hip hop head, man. When I was young, I was in the old school boom bap. That's what me and my homies liked and everything else sucked. And we were the cool guys. And that's that, you know, then I got older and believe it or not, I used to be a promoter. I used to be a hip hop promoter and the club owner I worked for, I really say I learned how to DJ from him. And he's like, you know what, Will, you like all this rap music? One day it might not be the hot stuff, man. And you should learn how to play this techno and this rave stuff. And I was like, I don't know. That's not me, man. And then literally he had me open for there was this headliner coming into town at the club. He was like, you want to open for him? I'm like, oh man, I don't know if I could do it, but it forced me to learn it. Cause like, you don't want to pass up an opportunity. And guess what? People came up to me after, like, man, that was really good. Wow. I've always known you as a hip. And it really opened my eyes. And then I went on a cruise ship. Then all of a sudden I'd play oldies and new. And back then that was not cool to do. Like, you were not cool if you had to play retro stuff. And I just opened my eyes. I just had an open mind, man. And it's to this day, like, believe it or not, I'm actually a pretty good country DJ. Like, I've done country. I did a big country festival in Canada, the biggest one. I was the first ever DJ they had on stage, and they had me in between country bands, and I just turn up the crowd. So, like, part of the mandate they wanted me, they were like, your set has to be half country, half whatever you want. So I got, like, super creative with it, and man, like, they loved it. People went nuts, you know? Okay. So, you know, I look at things like that as a challenge, and whenever there's a new type of music, I want to absorb it. Like, even now, I'm 44 and I'm just jumping onto TikTok now. I'm kind of late to the game, but now I'm going head first. You know, me and my partner Amber, we were thinking, like, for months, like, man, we got to get on TikTok. And to me, it's just not me. I mean, I'm a grown ass man doing, like, these stupid dances. And then finally we kind of figured out, okay, this is what we're going to do. And now we got this whole Christmas plan that we're pretty excited to do, where it really takes her musical strengths and my musical strengths. We're combining them together. So it's all about always keeping that diversity and always bringing something a little different. So, like, going back to your original question, which is, how do you keep it interesting? I've always done just enough to do that. So I've always made sure, like, it's kind of my personal trademark to keep it just interesting enough, and just knowing my audience. My best audiences are the open format types, where I can really go off. But even if I'm in a scenario where it's a certain kind of music, so, like, you know, take, for example, the Calgary Stampede, the country festival that I did, you know, I threw in country, but I threw in just enough EDM that people are like, whoa, that was awesome. And doing it flawlessly in a way that they would never expect. So I guess you could say that's always been my goal as a DJ, is to keep it interesting like that.
Yeah. It's, I grew up in the small town, and I hate country music. I still, to this day, I just can't get into it. It's every song I listen to, it's the same thing. It's about beer, women, trucks, and tractors. Those are the four things it's about. And I just, like, I never got into it. And everybody and their mother was listening to it back home. Like, totally. I mean, I grew up in a country town. Like, I mean, it was like 2,500 people, and then everything around it is just farmland. Totally. And then I was kind of the weirdo that would listen to electronic music, like, listen to these really far out, like, really niche underground genres in Germany. Right. Like, people would never have heard of these people.
Right.
And I thought I was
KMFDM.
The cool guys, and, like, people who had listened to Kraftwerk, like, never heard of Kraftwerk and stuff like that. So it's like, I thought I was the cool kid. So I know what that's like. And I had friends who listened to, like, the pop punk and the alternative music, like the Girls Like Boys and the Bullet for My Valentine, that type of stuff. Right. And all kinds of stuff. Like, there's a myriad of stuff, but it was mostly, like, country and then obviously pop, what's on the thing. But it's so interesting to hear that you're a DJ that specializes in kind of doing everything rather than just like, I only do EDM, or I only do country, or only do this and that.
I mean, I was just like you, man. I mean, to this day, I'll be honest, country's not really my thing.
Right.
But if there's one thing, I just have an appreciation to understand the other side. Like, I remember I was touring with Rihanna. And one of the most interesting stops, it's still, like, I'll never forget, you know, I was booked in a club in Nashville, and I saw it online. My agent booked it for me, and the place was called Acme. It was owned by Alan Jackson. I was like, man, dude, are you crazy? Like, what are you doing booking me at a spot like this? And he's like, oh no, it's pretty cool. Like, you'll do fine. And, you know, they're, you know, they want to interview you. They got a radio station at the top and they want to interview you. And I was like, what, are you for real? Like, okay. You told them can't talk about this or that. Anyway, it's one of the best interviews, man. They were so cool. People in Nashville were incredible. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget this place. The manager of the place, I mean, wow, we're still friends to this day, you know? Mm-hmm. And they just love guys like me, because it's so rare to find a guy that can do what I do and also throw in just enough country. Like, they weren't even asking for a lot. There's like, man, if you could play four or five country songs in the night, like, and I play, like, even more. Do you know what I mean? So, like, it's like, you try, you know, I've always wanted to bring people together with music. And as you know, we're really divided in the country right now. Right. So,
absolutely.
You know, I've, you know, and like, this is where I really want to go to bat for people and just remember how communal we really are, how we are united as a country. Like, you know, the guy that, you know, signs my work visa every year is a club owner from Jonesboro, Arkansas. Really, really nice guy. You know, I've DJed the depths of Mississippi, you know, Seattle to, you know what I mean? I've really DJed just about everywhere here in the U.S. And I can tell you that, man, we got a lot more in common than we have differences. You know? Yeah,
I agree. And like you said, we're probably the most divided we've been in over 100 years.
Yeah.
And it's really sad to see. I log on to Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and I used to see pictures of people sharing their, or people have picked, how would I say that? Pictures of people like sharing, you know, their families and out with their friends. And now right. those friends are arguing with each other and they hate each other. And,
right.
you know, family, their people are slinging comebacks and stuff at each other and disses and arguing about stuff.
Totally.
That just isn't, it's just dividing us even more than we really are. And, you know, what the media has done to this country is, it doesn't help. It just fuels the fire. It just fuels the fire.
It does. And well, you know, it's so tough because we're in a pandemic. I mean, you know, I try to keep my mouth shut, you know, but it's a real moral dilemma for me because, you know, I had a friend's brother die. I had a friend almost die. Yeah. And there's just so much misinformation. And I know that my words hold weight, you know. Mm-hmm. Did I lose you?
No, I'm still here.
No, sorry, your screen froze. Okay. You know, and so I know that. So I really took it upon myself to make sure the right words get out. And that's one of the hardest things because misinformation, people are so passionate about it. So like, how do you combat that? You know, and I try to pull my punches, but I think it's imperative when we think about the amount of people that we've lost already, like, science has to take a stand, you know, and that's where these guys know that if they're relentless with misinformation, it'll spread. So it's been really tough, man. It's been really tough. Like I don't know how to respond sometimes, but my general feeling is if someone's aggressive, you got to respond back and just be like, hey man, you know, what you're saying is not just untrue, it's absolutely untrue and it's dangerous.
Yes.
And here's why. And they'll rarely listen to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think I lost you. Oh, there you go. You came back. You're muted though.
Sorry.
There we go.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. Sorry about that, man.
No, that's all right.
I don't know if it's my connection kind of sucks out here.
Yeah. It might be your Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, all good. You were saying, and it's dangerous and you got to combat that.
Yeah.
I agree. I've really, and now that we're in the pandemic, there's so much information. We've all got this time on our hands too, to sit here and scroll through Facebook and Twitter and have the TV on all day long and just be spoon-fed information, whether it's correct or not. It's information, and totally. What we do with that information totally. is up to us. Whether, you know, we have these phones, these computers, where we have access to the whole world. Where something as simple as, you know, oh, that doesn't sound right. Like, that seems a little bit off. You can simply Google it. It takes 15 seconds to verify something.
Totally.
And totally. I've had to step back from that. Like, I just log off from Facebook so much. I log on there. I kind of throw the grenade and I bounce back. I post on there and I share, like, that's what I do. I pull the thing and I throw the grenade and I just let it go, you know, and I'm posting stuff about the podcast. I'm posting stuff about what I'm doing in my personal life and just sharing some thoughts here and there, but I don't post on there like I used to because it's so damn negative. And every time I go on there, I get caught up in somebody's argument and there's just some bullshit story that somebody's sharing. And there's been so many times where somebody will share something, I'll Google it, and I'll be like, here's an NPR article or something from a reliable source.
And,
I'll
be like, and they'll be like, oh, no, that's fake news.
That's fake. It's fake. It's not real. And I'll be like, yeah, here's where that's debunked. And it's like, oh, and they just argue it.
Yeah, and that's where I'll get really aggressive. So if people say something like that, I'm like, you realize like a 12-year-old like what you're saying is worse than what a 12-year-old would say.
Yeah.
Like if you literally are in the 10th grade or higher, you know how to debunk this stuff, you know? But I think you said it right in the beginning, man. You're absolutely right. People just want to be engaged, and then they have these needs to belong and feel a part of a community, and then they're fearful. So there's all these factors that I think, and Facebook is very much profiting. I don't know if you've seen the doc on Netflix. I think it's called The Social Dilemma.
I love it.
Yeah. Fantastic. Right. So
fantastic.
Yeah. So like you've got all these factors coming in. And so this is where, you know, my evolution as a musician, where I really see myself is moving towards creating music to simultaneously bring people together and realize that we have way more in common, and simultaneously somehow debunk this stuff and put leadership into thinking, hey, science is first, guys. Science is why we live an incredible life. Science is the reason why we have these incredible phones. Science is the reason we can communicate right now. You're in Los Angeles, I'm in Las Vegas, and we can see each other. Do you know what I mean? And and if we want to maintain that, it's absolutely essential for citizens to buy into that. Mm-hmm. We all need to be committed to that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. One argument that I was in, I bounced so quickly from it after I realized that this lady is just so far gone. She's not even worth saving, because she was saying she posted this sticker or picture basically saying that she was exempt from wearing a mask.
Right.
Because of her disability. And it says in the American Disabilities Act that she doesn't have to wear a mask for this and that. And then she was saying like Department of Justice and all this stuff overrules the stuff. And I'm like, okay, well wait a minute. Let's break this down here for a second.
Yeah.
Well, there was a website on the card and it had the website. I went to the site. It was a 404 error. It didn't even pull up the site.
Right.
No. So I'm like, okay, I can read more about what this card is. No information. I went on to the ADA website. There was no information. It says that this is false. And the site that she got it from was this this guy who claims to be an attorney. He never went to law school and never passed the bar exam.
Right.
It's like, this is your source? This is your source?
And you start to realize that like a lot of people really don't have the education to understand this stuff.
No, I'm like, she's not even worth arguing. Like she's so far gone. She just refused to even acknowledge this. So I'm like, okay, that's enough. I'm done.
So what I've learned is that when someone's so far gone, there's still people that are watching.
Yes.
So you know what I mean? And this is where like I've had the moral dilemma, because I don't really like to trash people, but I feel like it's important for other people watching to know just how out to lunch these people are.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know,
never thought of it that way.
Yeah. So like people have told me, and I know the science says to get someone to agree with you, you've got to slowly kind of bring them your way. And like you said, when some people are so far gone, you're better off hammering that person and showing what an idiot. Try to be funny about it. I never like to go directly for the jugular. Like I won't say that person's an idiot. I usually say something like, hey, congratulations. You just put something on the internet that could be debunked by a 12-year-old. It's really easy to do this. It doesn't take a lot of thinking, like you said, to use Google and to understand that there's some sources better than others. And then they'll bring up, oh, that's fake news. I'm like, oh, do you have a better source? Oh, I don't listen to mainstream media. Okay, well, what do you, let's walk. So, you know, you walk a person. So what do you listen to? This person? So now I'm not saying mainstream news is perfect, but they are accountable and they do have journalistic standards that they do have to follow. And if they don't, they get heat from everybody. So your guy, you know, Alex Jones or whatever, some whatever crazy source, who is he accountable to? Mm-hmm. As soon as you say that, oh, right, he has an agenda.
Right.
Everything he's trying to do is confirm his wacko theory. If it doesn't, he doesn't even bring it up. Mm-hmm. A mainstream journalist that you love to hate so much still has accountability. They might be biased. I'm not saying that it's not possible. There's no question. Most mainstream news is left-wingist biased. That doesn't mean they're not accurate. It just means they might not be telling you the full story. That I think that's fair to say, but that doesn't mean it's fake news. That's a giant leap here, you know? And now, I mean, we're in a situation where literally the commander in chief is saying the election was a fraud.
Like, and they have this. I've heard many sources say that this was the most secure election.
It was. Did you hear the latest news? The guy that oversaw it all just got fired. So he's being replaced now. It's crazy. It's
crazy authoritarian shit.
It's crazy authoritarian shit, man. It really is. It's scary stuff, right?
But that's the thing that these people have done is they've taken this, when it doesn't fit their messaging, they go for the juggler and they try to cut it and try to make it fit. And that's like, that's not how this works.
It's insanity, right?
Fact is a fact. Sorry.
It's insanity. It's insanity. And yet you have literally almost half the country which thinks he got cheated. I'm like, do you understand the ramifications of what you're saying? It's one thing, you know, when Hillary lost and I went all and which has been proven, but you know, we all said, hey, there's foreign intervention. That's entirely different from saying the election system is a fraud.
Yeah.
Because now you're suggesting the Democrats worked with the election officials to rig the election, which is a giant leap from saying the Russians interfered, which they did. I mean, people went to prison for that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Which is insanity. So like it's so baseless, but like I said, the ramifications, I don't know if they've ever stopped to think that. I mean, like, I'm like, do you understand what you're suggesting?
No, because their thing is to maintain control.
It's crazy.
And when they can't, they go for the juggler and saying that this is a fraud. And that's what they predicted people to do. That's what they said he was going to do, is he was going to come out early. He was going to say he won, which set him up for before they even counted all the votes, which I believe they're still counting votes. They're still tallying votes in some cases.
But Biden's won by a bigger margin than Hillary. Yeah. So there's no, like, it's just insanity now, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, to move this country forward, like, you know, this is where I see my role as a musician. You know, this is where I want to start moving towards that. And that's going to be a challenge because, you know, we're sitting here, we're preaching to the converted to each other. And how do we get that side? And it's really hard because, you know, we want to meet in the middle, but meeting in the middle is not the middle. It's, you know, you guys think that there's some crazy cabal that's trying to get rid of Trump. And I'm going, man, the guy was a reality show host that you think should be president and you think we're plotting, or does that, you know, what's the more likely scenario? But they're not able to conceive of that. So, and I know, like, I'm actually fascinated by the brain and why people do what they do. And if most people don't know just how powerfully biased we all are. Mm-hmm. So once you understand that you're as biased as the next guy, you know, knowing is half the battle. So these people are just not even aware that there's literally parts of your brain that kick into gear that tell you this is absolutely how it is, logic or not. So that's where these people are at. So
I think too, you know, that a lot of that factors into where everybody grows up. Like somebody who grows up in Las Vegas or in Los Angeles or in a bigger city, Chicago, where there is more cultural diversity amongst ethnicities and religions and just people in general, versus somebody who grows up in rural Montana of a town of 500 people, is going to have a much different mindset.
For sure. But I mean, hey, I'm going to interrupt you on that because you're from Fargo.
I am. Yeah. Around the area. Yeah, sure.
So we're making progress, right?
Absolutely.
I think that there's, you know, and that's, you know, that's where musicians need to come in. That's where we need to be that bridge for people.
Yeah.
You know, I like I said, I pride myself, you know, I play in you know, like I said, Jonesboro, I played for Ole Miss, Deep South. You know, these are places that have had a long history of segregation and all kinds of horrible stuff. Right. And these are some of the biggest fans I have. So it's been a tough balance, but that's where I see myself as rebuilding that bridge with music, because music does hit us on a more emotional level. So maybe we can reach these people that way, you know, and, you know, I see the polarization on both ends. I mean, you know, I see people like, you know, there's people on the left saying crazy stuff too on the extreme, but to be fair, they're not the mainstream, you know, these Trump supporter types, they try to make what a few people on the fringe of the left are saying as the mainstream of the left, which is nuts, you know, and it's incredibly unfair.
And to go further, it's worth noting too, that there's craziness on both sides.
For sure.
And there's stuff that I read from the far left, there's stuff that I read from the far right, but everything can be fact checked because a fact is a fact.
For sure.
And it's just as simple as Googling that, like something as crazy as far left. Like you can Google that just as much as you can Google something that came out of Trump's mouth and figure out, like, is this true? What's the basis behind this? Like, is there even any basis behind this?
I think that's the base. That's the next step for social media, is they need to start putting out videos that just show people how to debunk stuff, how to fact check, how to, like, you know, and I know they're doing that now for young people. I don't know if it's happening all across the country, but we need to start with people young. And you know what? I'll say this. Are we the first generation where the young people are wiser than the older? Because I'm really starting to see that. Like, how old are you? You said you're 25?
25.
I would bet you your generation has a greater percentage by a long shot of rational people than even my generation or the generation above me. You know, boomers, I mean, holy smokes, man. They have crazy, like, who would have thought, right? Like, there would be a time where young people knew more than older people. But I think we're at that place now.
I think my generation, even your generation and the generation below me, it's vital for them to be able to fact check these things and be able to really think for themselves and be able to really put two and two together. Like if somebody says something that isn't right, like there's just that, you know, you always go back to your gut. Like, does this feel right? No, then maybe you should look into that.
You just made a confirmation bias. So now imagine the you thinking that in, you know, some rural town somewhere, saying that, you know, that doesn't sound like, you know, my religion or whatever it is. Do you see what I'm saying? So that's why it's so important to be objective. Like, just because it feels right in your gut, does that make it right? Not necessarily.
So. No, it doesn't. And I'm very much like you, where I'm very objective with things. And I try to maintain very objective and say, like, hear both sides of the story, because there's always two sides of the story.
Totally.
But I've always tend to go with, when I'm in those situations, I refer to my gut, because I've kind of focused that energy and able to kind of
over time, you've been objective.
I've been objective, so I know that, okay, my gut, there's something wrong here. Okay, then I need to explore this a little bit more.
But I think a lot of it is just having the attitude. Like for me, you know, I joke around. The reason I'm so right is because I've been wrong so much. Mm-hmm. I'm just not afraid to say, hey, I thought this at one point. I don't think this anymore. And I learned over time. And in the process, paradoxically, makes me more right about stuff. I've never been afraid of saying, hey, you know what, man, I used to think like that, you know, and it was only through experience. And I mean, traveling really changed me. I mean, I've been in more countries than most people have been in cities, right? So that's been an enormous advantage to understand that. So, you know, how do we bring that sense of community all over the world? I think, you know, the internet's doing it, but it, in the wrong hands, the internet could turn it the other way, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where social media companies, just like, you know, talked about in that documentary, they actually profit off of that. They mm-hmm. profit off this division.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I've just recently really gotten into TikTok, and I've actually been quite impressed. I've been surprised at how positively influential. I haven't seen bad information. Maybe it's there. I haven't seen it. If it is, you know?
So, yeah, I'm on TikTok quite a bit, and the algorithm is pretty intelligent there. It's very, like, I've been on it for about 6 months now, 7 months.
Okay.
Well, maybe a year, about a year now. I was thinking of something else. And the algorithm for me, like, there's so many different things, like the things that I watch. Like, I see dog videos and cat videos, and I see political things occasionally, and I see people owning lizards and different exotic animals and birds. Like, those are the types of things that I like, because I can totally zone out on those things.
Yeah.
Like, and I get to see other people's pets and how they take care of them. And, like, it's just super interesting how TikTok works and how
it does. And you know what, man? I just got on it, and, like, I'm just starting. Like, I have a friend, a DJ I've known for like 20 years, and he's like blown up. He's got like 200,000 fans.
Wow.
He's killing it, man.
They have a thing where people are going live now, and these young kids are like, there's this kid in Arizona, or two brothers, and they go live on on TikTok, and you can send like these coins or presents.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I just learned
all
about that.
All he does is he's just like reading the comments and people are sending him coins. And then he's like, oh, if you send me, you know, this many coins, I'll follow you back. And then he's got like a dry erase board in the background where he's writing on, you know, who his top supporters are. And I'm like, this is, people are actually paying him to do this. That's just crazy. Like, it blows my mind.
It's super cool. Right. Like I love the younger generation, man. I call myself the world's oldest millennial because I just don't gel, man, with people from my generation. It's pretty rare. And like a good example is the DJ, like I told you on TikTok, Big Blizz. Like he's like me. He's a year younger than me. And you know, people watching him, they're in their early 20s, they're in their teens, and he's having a blast.
Yeah.
You know, most guys from our generation are like, oh, I'm too cool for that. You know, as they're sitting at home doing nothing. He created a really cool challenge that some of the biggest celebrities now are doing. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, he does the same thing. He does the DJ live thing. People request songs. They send him stuff. You know what I mean?
It's just so cool to see how quickly that app exploded and how people are making a living and how artists' careers are really taking off.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get a few TikTok musicians on the show for a while, some of them that I followed on the app, and I'm like, hey, let's get you on the show. Like, I want to hear more about how you do this. Like, what is it like being a TikTok musician? Like, this is a whole new universe that is just starting to kind of boom. And like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
How does it influence your streams? How does it influence your income on Spotify? Like, what's the conversion like? Like, I have just so many questions.
Right. I've been very fortunate in that way. I've got a whole different game plan when it comes to monetizing than most. That's a whole other topic we could talk about one day on your podcast.
So you know? Going back just a little bit, and we can get into that just a little bit. You've traveled. I want to talk about this before we get too far away from it, but you've traveled so many places, and you've been in the deep South where it's very kind of one wayed. And then you've been in bigger cities where there's all kinds of people and huge cultural diversity. Probably a lot of places where it's just mostly white, and seeing a person of color or another religion is just like unheard of.
Right.
So what's kind of the common ground between these types of people, and what is it that is so inspiring about the such diversity in spectrum that these people have?
That's a great question. So I'm trying to find a way to simplify the way my brain works. So it's helpful to think in macros and micros. So, you know, we're not supposed to generalize, but the reality is there are generalizations. So I can macro, but I'm well aware that if I generalize, when it comes down to the individual, that's out the window. So like, I will never judge you on everybody I know from Fargo, North Dakota. You know what I mean? But I'll judge Fargo, North Dakota a certain way.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like you can use the comparison of like, let's say, you know, that these casinos in Vegas, they're going to take your money. They're there to win. But on each individual bet, you never know.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a helpful way, I think, to look at life is I really treat every individual as unique. And I think it just comes from my own personal experience in life. I mean, I'm a Syrian, Muslim, Canadian living in Las Vegas. That's toward the world. So I've experienced every type of negative stereotype. I've experienced positive stereotypes, you know, all, you know, the whole gamut, right? So, and what I've taken from that is you've got to appreciate the uniqueness of every individual, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm truly interested in so many people that I meet. They're always surprised when I say that. I'm like, no, I'm like, when I meet people in other countries, I ask a million questions, you know, like I want to know more. Like when I did the Backstreet Boys, it was interesting because I was doing an after party somewhere and the Backstreet Boys Italy group grabbed the flyer. Like, this is how big this stuff is in Europe. He actually grabbed my after party flyer for the night I'm doing in Portugal to his fan page in Italy. And I got some heat from Backstreet Boys management. They're like, hey, you know, you can't be post, people are getting confused. You got to take the promoter of your flyer makes it look like the Backstreet Boys are coming. You can't. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. You know? So I found it on this other page and I'm like, hey, you got to take that down, please. And the guy was a nice guy. And then I'm talking, next thing I know, he's like, no way. So you're the D. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, oh man, it'd be so cool. And so I'm getting an extra day in Italy. I'm like, hey man, well, I would love to come out there. And like, we're still friends. Mm. The guy was so cool. I got in a couple days early for the Backstreet Boys show we had in Milan. So we went to Venice, and the guy, his dad was English and his mom was Italian. So like, he spoke English. Well, you know, like everywhere in the world, most people speak English, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and here I am connecting to a guy that is teaching me so much, right? And again, treating a person like an individual, because I want to know everybody's unique story, whether they're from Grand Prairie, Alberta, Canada, or, you know, Venice, Italy. Everybody's got something cool, and they bring a combination of these generalizations, but also something unique, right? So, and it's helped me understand the world better and understand people better.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. I love that. And I hope one day that I'm able to travel and just experience the world, because there's so many, just with the podcast, I've had so many people with different backgrounds and different cities and different parts of the world that I want to talk to and just learn. And I think education is the most important thing to understanding why people do certain things, or why people do what they do or say what they say. And just learning about people's religion and for sure, learning about people's culture and traditions. Like, maybe they have specific family traditions that they do. Like, I want to hear about that. Like, that stuff fascinates me. And to learn about that, because totally, then when I hear people bad-mouthing it and ripping on it, and I'd be like, that's not true. Like, that's not totally the correct generalization at all. So it's, I just love learning about that stuff, and it just fascinates me. And I love hearing that you've been able to experience so much. It's such an incredible thing that I hope a lot of people are able to do in their lifetime. Yeah. As we wrap things up here, one thing you talked about was your marketing thing. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you mentioned in your thing that you made $30,000 on a song with less than 1,000 streams. Like, how is that possible?
Right. Right. So, you know, I take parallel thinking to a whole other level. Yeah, like I said, that would be a topic on a podcast alone. But basically,
sure,
it's all about understanding a market and where there's a gap. One of the best, I love reading. So if anyone wants to truly become the best they can be, find the best thinkers in the world. And if they have a book, read it. Find out what the best books are about business, habits, professional this, music that. One of the best books I ever read is a book called Blue Ocean Strategy. So the long and the short of this book is you want to take established industries in different areas and find gaps. And you want to find windows of opportunity in these gaps. So it's a combination of stuff, understanding that, you know, what do clubs need? Clubs need something that they can offer their clients, something new and exciting. So I had a good friend of mine, Fat Man Scoop, happens to be the number one hype man in the world.
Love Fat Man Scoop. He's been featured in quite a bit of EDM tracks.
Oh, okay. If you love him, he's actually a good friend of mine.
Oh, cool.
So maybe I could talk to him about going on your podcast.
Would love to have him on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. He's great to talk. I actually, one of my favorite YouTube channels, side note, the guy's literally my neighbor here in Vegas. It was the weirdest thing ever. I'm like, how is it possible that one of my favorite YouTubers is literally my neighbor? Anyway, long short of it, Scoop was like, this guy's got like 85,000 subscribers. Great. It's Spencer Carinelli. If you ever want to find a great YouTuber, talks about a lot of really cool stuff. Anyway, Scoop was coming here to meet me to do marketing stuff. Ends up doing an interview for his YouTube channel. It's crazy. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, anyway, back. So I do this song with Fat Man Scoop. Now, I know that the marketing and everything to make the song hit, it's going to cost me thousands. Will it take off? Maybe, maybe not. But I also know I have all these relationships with a club, and they're always looking for something new and exciting. Now, to bring Fat Man Scoop with me is a lot of money. So most of them can't afford that, but some could. And those, we do this thing. So here's how I branded it. The song's called Bottle Popper. And on the drop, we did a thing where, you know, the waitresses would pop bottles. We'd pop confetti. I'm like, it's having New Year's in your club any time of the year. So as soon as I used that, the clubs were hooked. And I'd show them videos of where we did this, and they would see this bottle pop, boom. And they're like, this is fantastic. And what does it cost the club? It costs me. I've got my song that we can use. And I did some heavy marketing in that area. And that's using my Facebook ad expertise. And then I'd say, hey, I've toured the world, but now I'm coming to your city, you know, wherever it is, Chicago. I did one in Bismarck, Miami, wherever it was. And I'm bringing the Bottle Popper tour to your city. And, you know, we're going to do, it's going to be just like New Year's. So, and then we do like the video shoot of it too. So sometimes we'd even stop the music. We'd slow down the music. I'm like, all right, you know, we get everybody ready. Everybody loves being on camera. Everyone loves seeing something they could show their friends. So, you know, we'd line it up just right. We'd have the video cameras going and boom. And we got some incredible footage that I then put together for another promotion. So I'm like, hey, I did this club in Miami. I did this club in Chicago. I did this club in Toronto. You can be a part of this as well. So, you know, every club I charge an average of $1,000. Some might charge a little less, some a little more, right? And it was totally worth it because I'd provide this marketing material for them that would get people in the clubs. I don't know how old school you get, but a DJ by the name of LTJ Bookham. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He's a real old school guy. He's a drum and bass DJ. And I met him. I crossed paths with him one day and he's like, it's all about putting bums in seats. If you can find a way, the money. So that's another life tip I would tell musicians, go where the money at.
Yeah.
So follow the money. Where's the money? It's in doing these live shows. How do you get these live shows? You got to put bums in seats. If people are willing to pay $10 to see you and you can get 100 people to do that, that's $1,000, not including the drinks. Right. So like, it's a pretty good deal because, you know, a club could be reasonably sure that they're going to get a couple of hundred people paying $10 to see me. So if I'm charging them $1,000, that's a pretty good deal. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the key, is you've got to do things that other people don't and find these windows of opportunity that other people aren't. Like, you know, when you think of Spotify, I mean, there's no money in Spotify, right? Even if you make a song hit, it's not really worth it. Like the amount of money you've got to put into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I've never had, Spotify's just never been a big strategy for me. I'm now working on YouTube. That's where I want to go. And I'm podcasting is something I'm very keen to do because I want to have these conversations. Most people don't, like what we've just talked about in an hour, a lot of my own fans would be surprised. Most people don't know, like my education's economics. I went to school, I got a degree in money and banking, you know?
Wow. So,
yeah. I mean, I could sit here and talk about the economy with you for a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it helps people to know my background. And this is very much, again, it comes back to me wanting to do music with more depth and more meaning and more bringing people together and creating. This is my ultimate goal of where I want to go, me and my partner, you know? So it's pretty cool that you had me on. I'm really grateful we could talk about this stuff, you know?
Yeah, of course. Always happy to chat. And this was such a great conversation. You shared so many good tips and touched on so many different topics.
Yeah, so many musicians, that's what I would tell them, is find a strength that you have and figure out where there's money in that. And never be afraid of, one of the biggest mistakes I see young musicians is they're so worried about their brand. And I'm like, man, be a lot more worried about where you're going to get money. Money is your resource. You need money to get at, to market yourself. You need money to buy the right gear. You need money to get yourself into the right places. That should be your priority when you start, and honing your skills and then building your marketing. I mean, if you're spending time doing, and the money's in doing corporate stuff, you know, and you're gaining experience as a musician when you do stuff like that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, absolutely. You know, so, and so I would say there's so much, people put too much into image, way too much. If people realize just how uncool I really am, they'd either be.
One of my favorite people, I follow him, is Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah, yeah.
And he is just the cut the bullshit type of guy.
Totally.
And he is literally like, how old are you? 12? You have a cell phone? Then start. I want you tonight to make a video. I want you to make a 5-minute video talking about something that you love, and I want you to put it on YouTube. And then I want you to do the same thing in 2 days, and I want you to keep doing that. And like, he just puts it in, like, it's so simple. Like, stop worrying about how pretty it looks. Just put content. Just do it.
Put it out and refine as you go. Don't be afraid of that. Don't be afraid of I could tell you, man, I have literally made an ass out of myself in front of 20,000 people. You know, I did something and no response, like literally. Mm-hmm. But out of that process, I get an incredible response on 90% of what I do, mm-hmm. right? Like there's this little bit that I do where I take a heavy EDM song and it breaks right when you think it's going to be the drop. It's Whitney Houston and I'm like, and it builds to the drop and you think it's going to be, I'm like, everybody get your hands in the air way up like this. And I'm like, now I want you to look at a stranger next to you. Look him right in the eye right now. And then it breaks in and I will always love you. Right. The first time I ever did that, I was terrified. I was like, I was almost shaking. I was so nervous. Yeah. Like, you know, it, you know, in hindsight, it was one of the best things I've ever done. Cause now I do it in almost every set. I'm literally famous for it in Europe. It got to the point where people would talk about it in the forums. Wow. You know, I was like, it's really fun watching people talk about you. You know what I mean? And like, so cool. Right. So you've got to do that. You've got to be ready to get your head chopped off, man. Cause it won't, you know, one of the best books I've ever read, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was literally all about rejection. Mm. All about rejection and like literally being okay with rejection.
Yeah.
And I think I get it from my dad. I don't know. My dad was just, you know, a little short, fat Middle Eastern guy that just didn't give a shit, man.
Yeah.
And like when I was a kid, I was so embarrassed. I could tell you so many weird, I could tell you one of the weirdest stories you've ever heard in your life right now. If you want something I've never shared with anyone.
Yeah.
But just ahead. Tells you like how weird. Okay, so I'm just thinking about how weird this story is. So I'm Muslim, okay? And, you know, don't say this too loud, but I'm not the best Muslim out there. So my dad and mom are very religious. They're very conservative.
Sure.
And one thing that's really important to them, and this is my dad, is learning how to bury my father. So I come home to visit my mom and dad. This was about 2 or 3 years ago. And I'm like, Dad, you know, we should do something, you know, time's getting short. What do you think we should do? It's like, how about I got the idea. I want to take you to a funeral, a Muslim funeral. So you know how to bury me. Okay, Dad, that's not what I was expecting, but all right. And lo and behold, where do my parents live? Across the street from a graveyard as it happens. So my dad checks with a local mosque when the next Muslim's getting buried. And so we go. This is where it gets weird, okay? The story's not weird yet. So we're Syrian. We're Arab, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the people, the guy who died, he's Fijian. He's a Fijian Muslim. So he's Indian, like, you know, from India.
Okay.
Right? So these people are, you know, they're Muslim like us, but they're a totally different culture. They're different people. They're like... You know, sure. It's the difference between, you know, an American and a German or an American and a Russian or something.
Sure.
So like there's some, you know, the anyway, so, and we're generally quite lighter skin. Like these are dark skinned people. Mm-hmm. So we go to this funeral. We're like, it's so weird, man. Like we don't speak the same language. Right. So it's all these people crying. And I feel horrible saying that. It's all these people crying. And it's me and my dad. We clearly don't know anybody here. And my dad just wants to teach me how to bury him like a Muslim. So I'm like the most awkward I've ever felt in my life. And they're like carrying the guy or like the casket into the grave where they get the body out. Like that's how Muslims do it. And like my dad's like, come here, come here, come here. And this is like, you know, I'm this grown man. I'm like, oh God, Dad, like we don't know any of these people. What are you doing? Right. But like, you know, it's just the weirdest story I know. Right. But like, it all comes back to like, this is what I grew up with. So I think I carry it to this day. You just learn how to not be afraid of rejection. And I've been there. I've had myself shut down. I've had people make fun of me. I've had people trash me. I've seen it all. And yet, I learned something from it all. Like I'm still going, you know, I was just talking to the DJ, the friend of mine that's big on TikTok. And we were talking about how even the local DJs, cause he's actually from where I'm from in Canada, in Vancouver. Mm. And he's talking about, he's still not getting love from those guys. And I'm like, bro, I DJed for Ariana Grande. I DJed for the Backstreet Boys. I DJed for Mariah Carey. And there's still local yokels in my hometown that hate on me. You know what I mean? So like rejection's too, is easy. Anyone can, laugh at you. Anyone can make fun of you, right? Mm-hmm. The tough part is, as a musician, as an individual, is to really know how to balance that and know what criticism you should listen to and what criticism you should like go, hey, maybe there's something to that.
Mm-hmm. And like, does it really matter? Like what they're saying, like, does it really matter? Like, does some local Yoko like really matter? Probably not.
Well, that's the secret. Yeah. So the secret is who to listen to and what to listen to.
Yes.
And that because you should be open to criticism, right?
Absolutely.
Like, even, you know, one thing that's been really cool is, you know, between me and my girlfriend, like, you know, when we started, we'd really butt heads on a few things, right? I mean, she comes from a professional musician, you know, so she's really particular about a few things. I play loose and fast with a few things.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, I'm trying to tell her like, hey, you know, hon, no, don't worry about that right now or this. But, you know, it's been a really cool journey for both of us as she has, you know, we've both seen both sides of it, right? And what we can gain from both sides, and we both become proficient. So, you know, I have listened to her, and I'll listen to, a lot of times I'll listen to a fan from a small town, or, you know, and that's the key, is understanding, like, and understanding what your resources are and what your limits, you know, that's always important stuff to factor. So mm-hmm. I would say, as a musician, always learn to do that. And if you're young, don't follow what the big guys are doing, because you're only seeing the surface. You're not seeing what's behind, what's happening behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think TikTok's great.
Yeah. TikTok is great. I've been trying to think of new ways to integrate even the podcast with TikTok, but I'm like wondering how that would go about, like, because the audience is like, there's an audience for everything on TikTok. But even like you said, with this podcast here, is literally, I had wanted to start at a podcast that this has been going for 2 years now, and this will be like 72 or 75 episodes now, after this one's released.
Okay.
And I have one or two more this week. I actually had one right before you with, 303, the group 303. And
no way.
Yeah. I had,
they're from Denver, right?
Yeah. No, Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder, right.
Yeah.
Colorado,
yeah. Denver, I think that's like a suburb of Denver. I don't know Colorado that well. But yeah, I had them on the show. I followed them for years. And like, I just had wanted to start the show for a while now. I just kept saying, I'm going to start a podcast. And I kept trying to like line up the stars. And I'm like, well, wait a minute here.
Right.
I have a microphone. I have a computer. I have a Logic. And I have an interface to plug my microphone into. And I'm just like, fuck it. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to hit record and just start the podcast. And now look, I've got people like you on the show. I've had people like 303 on the show. I've had just numerous big artists, and people are consistently reaching out now. And it's like, I built this up. It's something that I'm super proud of. And it's like, I just bit the bullet that one day.
Awesome.
And I've taken a lot of rejection over the years, and it's still not up to the quality that I want it to be at. It's as best as it can be, but I've continually refined it, and I keep tuning it and finding things that are working. And like, that's just how it is. I've been doing this for 2 years and 75 episodes, and it's still not perfect.
That's fantastic. And
so it's like, you just gotta keep doing it.
But you know, and this would be like my next tip, if I could give you one or whatever, because you're doing great with it, is find collaborators where you have complementary skills. You know, so it's like, you know, you want to find someone, let's say from my generation, that has the gigs, or, you know, someone that's, you know, whatever the skills you have, you want to bring that to the table as a piece of the pie to join somebody else with a piece of the pie. Right.
Yeah.
So
it's a good tip.
Yeah. So like, it's very easy for artists to congregate with like-minded people. But it's generally not helpful for that artist. Like, for me to hang out with other DJs is just generally not helpful for me. Right. So for me, I mean, I can't even begin to tell you how crazy and weird and fortunate I was with, you know, my girlfriend, because we did not meet through the music industry. We did not start by collaborating. This was not even on the table. I remember watching one of your podcasts where you had a girl talk about how she got taken advantage of. And that was actually a really interesting
story. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a really interesting podcast. And I think that's a huge problem in this game, man. And like, you know, and that's another thing for young artists, is find truly good partners. And that's a tough thing to do, but you know, you can think of what you've got. You can bring that to the table. Hey guys, I've got this. I've got the connections I've made through this, and I can help us. Once we get to this, we can start broadcasting, because I understand how to broadcast, or I understand how to market. Do you know what I mean? So that's the key. And you know, I'm not even sure what instrument you play. So, you know, you want to find other people with other stuff that brings something to the table, right? So,
yeah, it's been such an incredible journey, and I've met some incredible people through this, and I've met people in person, like people that I've had on the podcast. I've met them in person,
for sure,
and starting to have some of my idols on the show, like 303. Like I grew up listening to them. Like I would. You know, the DJs would drop their music at the high school dances, and I went berserk. You know, my friends and I would sing every lyric, and just to have them on the show is is humbling.
It's a cool feeling. I mean, even it's so weird to say, Fat Man Scoop's one of my best friends, and he's literally the reason I started DJing. Wow. I used to be a promoter, and this is how far back I go. And you know, the DJs would play his party breaks, and then they'd play, of course, what became huge, which was Be Faithful.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know, but that was an underground record for like 5 years before it was officially released. So like, and I would always ask the DJs, man, who is that? Like, I always hear this voice, and it's like, he's like, oh, that's Fat Man Scoop. And that literally was like, and I would get all these party break records from these DJs from Vancouver, and I'd have them. So like, I could get a party going with these. And now this guy's like one of my best friends. It's super weird, right?
Yeah. There's a song I know him from. It's from 2015, actually.
Oh, really?
Where he partnered or he collaborated with Disco Fries.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
On a track.
Yeah. Yeah. I know the one, and I'm trying to think of it.
Volume by Disco Fries.
Yes.
It was released on Protocol Recordings.
Right.
And yeah, that's when I originally discovered him, and his vocals in there are just like super hype. He's just got that voice to him.
He's a super interesting guy.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'd love to have him on the show. I think he'd be a great guest.
He would blow your mind. His life is movie worthy. The you know his big song, right? Be Faithful.
Yeah, I'd have to re-listen to it again to really get it in.
So Be Faithful. You guys are probably the first generation to not really know it, but that is arguably the biggest song in club history.
Wow.
So if you've been, so like, I know your generation is starting to lose that sort of status, but anyone sort of 28, 29 and up will tell you that if that song gets played, the whole place lights up. And it's been like that for 20 years.
Wow.
Right. Wow. And you know, he could tell you the history of that song.
Oh, hello? You're muted. There you go.
Yeah, sorry, man. I lost you a couple times there.
No, all good.
But yeah, you'll have to give me snippets of this too. And like going back to what we were saying, like I'd love to like promote it on my Facebook and my, you know, find a cool clip of something funny I said. Talk about that funeral.
Yeah,
I've never publicly shared that story. I've got stories. I could share stories for days that people have no idea of me. You know, like I live this surreal life because like. You know, I remember when I was finishing my college degree, I was living with my parents in Vancouver, and my buddies would just have a field day with the fact that I do these massive events, and then I come home to a mom that just yelled at me and treated me like a 10-year-old. You know what I mean? They're like, dude, do your parents have any idea what you do? I'm like, no, and they don't care.
Yeah.
Like they're like, you're just classic Arab parents, man. They're like, go to school, get a degree and get a good job, shut up and have kids. And that's a win, you know, to them, these crazy ideas of dreaming big, that's for crazy people.
Yeah. Yeah. Forget about it. Cool. Well, yeah this
it's
was,
been, it's been,
go ahead.
I was going to say, but it's been remarkably grounding for me. I think a lot of artists would help them to be grounded. You know, they set their bar a little too high, you know, without understanding the steps that it takes to get there.
Yes. I've done that. I set the bar too high and I'm like, wait, I got to do A, B, and C before I can get to D. And, you know, baby steps before you can't just jump.
Right. One of my favorite authors, you know, he talks about that. He goes, if you want to find out whether you really want to do a goal or not, break it down into all the steps, good, bad, and ugly. And if you still want to do it, then do it. Because, you know, that takes some knowledge of knowing just what it takes. Mm-hmm. But like, if you break something down enough and go, wow, I'm going to have to lose this, I'm going to have to do that, you know, and I'm gonna, is it still worth it? Then keep going. If it's not, time to pull out.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this was, we've been talking for almost an hour and a half now. This is, this has been such a great conversation.
I know, right?
Yeah, you're such an inspirational guy.
Yeah, man.
Come off of this pretty inspired, pretty motivated for the rest of the week.
Thanks, man. Me too. You've been asking fantastic questions. I can tell you've been doing this for a while.
Oh,
really impressed.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, when you start your
podcast. I love young people now, man.
Yeah, when you start your podcast, let me know. Happy to give you some pointers and help you out in any way that I can. But before I let you go, how can the listeners keep up with you on whatever, everything you're doing? And then when music comes back, find the events that you're performing at. And yeah, just reach out if they have any questions.
Well, I really want to get my TikTok because we're about to do these Christmas dance challenges. So I'm really excited and I'm going to be revealing more about that on TikTok. So okay. That's the first thing I'd like to do. And the easiest way to find me is just my name, Knowledge. And that's spelled K-N-O-W-L-E-D-J. And
I'm going to follow
Instagram,
you right now.
Which is same thing. Yeah. And then there's Knowledge and it's just the number one. And that's also for my Facebook. So yeah, expect some cool stuff. And I've got this really cool Christmas thing. If you want to be a part of it, Fat Man Scoop's going to be a part of it. I'm really starting to line up some of my big friends because they like the idea of what I'm doing. I'll give you a clue. It's got to do with reindeer and Rudolph. So
okay, yeah, I'll be a part of it. Whatever you need, I'll help out.
Yeah. So we're you know, it's something me and Amber have come up with. So pretty excited to reveal it. We're going to debut it next week. I think Thanksgiving weekend or Black Friday.
Cool. So, great. Well, I'll put all of your links and socials in the show notes below for everybody can reach out and follow you and keep up with everything that you're doing. So I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule and chatting with me. I'm glad we can make it work after some emails and go back and forth. But yeah, take care. Good luck on this. Keep up with the success. And keep in touch. Let's keep in touch.
Absolutely. You bet.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
Have a good night and take care.
Okay.